I want to thank the Edelmans and the Hardys and the Halls and the Otts for helping us with that last session. I could have listened a lot longer. And wasn't it apparent that they were passionate about their families and that they wanted to tell us about their families? And I appreciated that very much. I wish we had time to, Chris, if you could cut me down just a hair. I wish we had time to ask those four to give us insights into what they might have learned by doing that exercise and by standing up here. It would be neat to hear what they would have to say. And the idea was, though, that they were communicating with one another and with us, and they were expressing appreciation. That was what we were trying to illustrate with that. And, you know, there are activities we can do with our families regularly. It makes us feel good when we hear good things said about us, doesn't it? And Mark Twain said, I could live for 2 months on a good compliment. Well, I can too, and I need to be appreciated. I had a former student the other day that works at Faulkner now, and he emailed me and just said, just a quick note to let you know how much I appreciate the influence you had on me when I was a student here. And he used a couple of examples. I didn't even remember the examples he was talking about. But I made a copy of that email. I may be vain, but I have a folder called Special Messages from Special People. In those days when I'm down and out, I go to that folder and I get out and somebody sends something nice. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not as bad as I thought I was. We need to be appreciated, don't we? And patted on the back. And our family members are the same way. And you did a good job of that with this exercise. There's a wonderful little poem there. This handout is on the table out there if you'd like it. I got 2 A's, the small boy cried. His voice was filled with glee. His father very bluntly asked, why didn't you get 3? Mama got the dishes done. The girl called from the door. Her mother very calmly said, did you sweep the floor? I mowed the grass, the tall boy said, and put the mower away. His father asked him with a shrug, did you clean off the clay? The children in the house next door seemed happy and content. Same things happened over there, but this is how it went. I got 2 A's, a small boy cried. His voice was filled with glee. His father very proudly said, that's great. I'm glad you belong to me. Mama got the dishes done. The girl called from the door. Her mother smiled and softly said, each day I love you more. I mowed the grass, the tall boy said, and put the mower away. His father answered with much joy, you've made my happy day. Children deserve a little praise for the task they're asked to do. If they're to lead a happy life, so much depends on you. And the idea with family strengths is looking for the good in every family member. There's good in every one of us. And we need to regularly be telling one another about it. That's one of the stepping stones. Appreciation and expressing that appreciation with one another. And that can come in a lot of different forms. You could build a tower of balloons with your family. And you can gather up in a circle. We used to do this with our kids. We'd get in a circle. We call it the appreciation circle. It's okay, now we're going to go from go around and right all the way around, and each person has a turn. And the person on your right, you say something nice about them. Well, that was a real challenge for David and Sarah at times, you know, trying to think of something good to say about one another. And then we went around the circle once, we'd go around the other direction and say, okay, now the person on the left, you say something nice about them. And so everybody was complimenting one another. The Bible says, give, and it shall be given unto you. Do you want kindness? Show kindness. Do you want love and respect? Show love and respect. Do you want appreciation? Show appreciation. I think it's such an integral part of a successful, strong family that we appreciate one another and that we express that appreciation. And these four did a beautiful job. I think they could have gone on for another hour, don't you? They love their families. And they were looking for the good in their families. And there's the emphasis. So we were talking about communication, appreciation, and time together. We need to be spending time with our families. I've talked to several of you because several of your kids have been in my marriage and family classes over the years. It's a required course, so if you come to Faulkner, you have to take it at some point. They say it's a popular class, but, you know, they have to take it. So it fills up each semester. But I have 50 or 60 students in there. Now, these are young adults, anywhere from ages, you know, 18, 19 to 22 or 3. Usually I have some older ones in there as well. But that age range, for the most part, an excellent age to ask them, what was your family like that you grew up in? What went on there? What are your perceptions now? And looking back, what do you think about it? And so, day one, I give them a big index card. And I say, on side one, I want you to put a 1 up in the upper right-hand corner. On side 2, put a 2. Circle it. Now, on side 1, I want you to describe for me the greatest memory of the home that you grew up in. You know, you don't have to use the whole card, just something simple. Then turn it over on side two and describe the worst memory of the home you grew up in. And I've saved these cards over the years. Steve, did we do this when you were in my marriage and family class? We didn't do it. Should have. I brought some samples. I've saved these over the years. And I probably won't read all of these, but just listen. Listen for a theme, if you would. These are young adults now. They've come out of your home. They've gone off to college. And here's what they're saying. The greatest memory of home. The days when Mom didn't work. She was at home when I got off the school bus. During hurricanes, tornadoes, my family and I would cram into the living room and play board games, card games. Spending time together was the best. Having barbecues, small family get-togethers. Sitting around the dinner table, discussing our day, laughing together. Going on picnics, riding, learning how to ride my bike and flying my kite in the park on Saturdays with my parents. Christmas. We're a very small family, but very close. We always come to my parents' bedside early morning to wake them. This was the joy of their life, seeing the little happy expressions on our faces as we opened our gifts and got into our stockings. When I lived in Georgia on the lake, me and family went fishing and camping all the time, taking walks up to the bee tree with my grandma. That would have been interesting. My best memory of home was Friday nights when I was little. We used to play board games as a family. It was always fun and full of laughs. Now, these are young adults now. These are the best memories. Sitting around the kitchen table laughing at everything and teasing each other. Just having fun as a family and laughing, joking around. Sitting in the den with my family, just talking. My best memory of home was listening to my granny tell a story about the old days. We have lots of holiday traditions at my house. It really makes me feel like we're a family because we can always count on everybody to remember them and honor our traditions. One of my favorite memories of home was going for walks with my family. Not only did we walk, we explored. We would hike through the trees, the fields, and sometimes the mud that had previously been a lake. When I was young, it felt like such an adventure. My best memory at home is when we would sit down together as a family and eat dinner and talk about all the good things that had happened that day. We used to do Friday night game night. We would order pizza and be together as a family. Having dinner, homemade, especially Mom's tasty meatloaf. These dinners always brought the family together, away from everyone's busy schedules. I especially miss those dinners while I'm here at Faulkner. My favorite memories at home are at Christmas time. My dad always puts the tree up and my mom adds the lights and then my brother and I add the ornaments. When all my family members were home for Christmas, our entire family took a trip to Hilton Head, South Carolina for Christmas one year. We had lots of fun and made great memories. There weren't any distractions from home, which made it easier to enjoy the family vacation. We went on a family cruise with my step-grandparents, the 50th anniversary to Cozumel. Family vacations. The best memory of my home when I grew up in was I knew my mother and father loved me because they always hugged me and laughed at me a lot. They thought I was a hilarious child. Waking up in 1993 to a blizzard by Southern standards. My family as a whole playing in the snow, no fighting, was a fun collective day off, all work and school. Well, you know, I have more. I have tons more of these in my office. What did you hear there? What were some of the themes there? Sharing as a family. Unity as a family. Quality time together. Most of the activities they described didn't cost very much, did they? It's being together. And it amazed me, and here you got a little glimpse of it, but every semester I'm amazed at how much food is involved, they talk about. Maybe that's because here at church we have fellowships all the time. And I got a feeling it's because of Mom's good cooking. But spending time together, being together as a family. This is the greatest memory of home. I think one of the greatest legacies that parents can leave their children are memories of a home where they were loved unconditionally. As per Luke 15, I mean, you think about that story. I know the greatest meaning of that is Jesus trying to get us to see God's love for us. And what a powerful way to show it. But think about the dynamics in that family. Two boys, both with their own personalities. Isn't it interesting how in the same family you can have different kids? And you were describing that up here. They're all different and unique. Train up a child in the way he should go. Guy Woods thinks or suggested that perhaps the way he should go has to do with the way he is bent. Understand that particular child. There's the challenge of parenting. It's not train up a child in a perfect way and they will turn out to be perfect children. In fact, that verse doesn't even say parents train up a child, does it? It's a general principle, and I believe it's certainly true. I endorse it. If we train them young, it'll always be part of who they are. But understand the uniqueness of each child. There's the real challenge of parenting. I have to take this personality and blend it somehow with this personality and show them God and lead them and motivate them and put a thirst and a desire in their heart to be like God and to want to please God. There's the challenge of parenting. And so time together is really important. To these young adults. That's what they were telling us. There are other things we can do, and somebody in one of these cards mentioned traditions. Traditions in our families. What traditions do we have in our homes? And I will ask premarital couples, what were some of the traditions in your homes? And they'll share some of these things. And they'll talk about birthdays and holidays and Thanksgiving and Christmas. And traditions, the Friday night tradition. We had a tradition at our home. We called it den camping. We camped out. There were about 2 years there when David was about 10 and 11 and Sarah was about 6, 7, long in there. And every Friday night we would camp out, winter, summer, all through the year. Every Friday night we camped out in the den. We'd get our sleeping bags and put them down and then shared popcorn, make some other goodies, and we'd eat it and watch movies together and play board games. It got to the point where our kids would come to us on Friday afternoon and say, Daddy, Mama, when are we going to get the sleeping bags out? They loved it. I do remember now, if I want Sherry to know I told you this, I'll tell her. But after about, I don't know, a couple of months of that, Sherry said, you know, sleeping on that floor is mighty hard. Do you mind if I sleep on the couch? So she slept on the couch while the kids and I stayed on the floor. Den camping. Being together. Traditions are a big part, I think, of family success. No part of our work will afford such a time, or such a true testimonial of our living as the memorials we leave behind in our homes. The memorials. The things that they remember. Over in Luke 15, what was it that turned that boy's life around? He was in a pig pen, and he remembered home. And our kids are going to remember our homes from now on. That's why we need to be careful about the way we interact with them and with each other. They're watching, they're learning, they're remembering. It's part of who they are. And may we weave good memories with our kiddos. Okay, where are my volunteers, Ricky? There's one of them. Yeah, come on, help us out here. Every couple needs a sheet. Every couple needs a sheet. And you need something to write with. And I have some pencils if anybody needs a pencil. Anybody need a pencil? One sheet per couple or per person. And if you're a couple, you need to sit close to one another and share and look on together. Every couple have one? Thanks, guys. I'm going to need you again before we finish here. Thanks. All right, now I'm going to ask you, I'll give you 2 minutes to work on this. We'll take 2 minutes with this. Look at the first one. Each of these depicts a famous or a familiar saying. The first one, sand in the box, or sandbox. The second one, man overboard. See what I'm saying? All right, I've got you started now. See how far you can go with it. 2 minutes. Thirty more seconds. Okay, stop. How many did somebody get? How many did you get?
None.
Okay, how many did somebody else get? 14. Anybody beat 14? How many? 16. Anybody beat 16? 16. 16 once. 16 twice. 16, that's pretty good in that amount of time. Okay, let me give you the answers right quick, just for fun here. One is sand in the box. Two is man overboard. Three, I understand. Four, reading between the lines. Five, long underwear. By the way, I'm going to give you these answers so you don't have to copy all this down. Six, crossroad. Seven, tricycle. Eight, downtown. Nine, split level. 10, 3 degrees below zero. 11, right below the knee. 12, circles under the eyes. Anybody get that one? Circles under the eyes. 13, high chair. 14, a pair of dice. 15, touchdown. 16, 6 feet underground. 17, mind over matter. 18, he's beside himself. That's pretty good, isn't it? 19, a backward glance. 20, life after death. Anybody get 21? A see-through blouse. Good. A see-through blouse. 22, GI overseas. GI overseas. Where are my volunteers? Still got three? Good. Each couple needs one of these. Now, this is a blank one if you want to make copies for your family. And it has the answers on it as well. Just a fun activity for families to do. And while they're handing those out, let me go ahead and begin our thoughts about commitment, another stepping stone, commitment. Commitment, first of all, to the marriage relationship, to one another. That's what I want to spend most of my time in this session talking about. Commitment to each other as a couple. But commitment to the family, in addition to the commitment to our relationship. I think effective parenting can be broken into at least two components. I would say marital interaction and parental discussion. Marital interaction and parental discussion. And this is a simplified way of seeing our responsibilities. But marital interaction is simply the loving bond that we have between each other as spouses. Parental discussion is when you discuss your parenting with your kiddo, about your kiddos. Examples would be, do you discuss with your spouse your children's development? Do you discuss with each other your children's development? A great verse on this, a good guide, is Luke 2:52, where Jesus increased in wisdom, there's intellect, and stature, there's the physical, and in favor with God, there's the spiritual, and with man, there's the social. Great guideline for development of our children. Do you discuss with your spouse your children's problems, the challenges they face at school, or the problems they're having with friends, fears or worries that they have? Do you discuss with your spouse goals for each child? Do you discuss with your spouse your frustrations as a parent? Parental discussion. Now, let's take a little more time with marital interaction. Marital interaction. There have been several studies and research done in this area and correlations made between good, strong marriages and effective parenting. There is a strong correlation in the research. Good marriages and effective parenting. They are related. One study of school-aged children and their parents revealed that marital quality is a predictor of a father's ability to give positive feedback to his children. If the father had low marital satisfaction, he was less likely to give positive feedback to his children. The extreme of negative findings was a study of 129 incestuous fathers. Yes, believe it or not, there are biological fathers out there that sexually abuse their children. Marital failure among sexual offenders was one of the distinguishing characteristics that led to the sexual abuse of children. Marital failure led to sexual abuse of children. Glenn Elder, who was the man that studied families who experienced the Great Depression, discovered that a close and compatible marriage offsets some of the ill effects of economic deprivation, particularly for sons. In other words, a close marriage was able to provide security for boys despite massive economic problems. Research indicates that the quality of our married life goes a long way toward determining our communication with our children, the protection of our children, our commitment to and satisfaction with our children, and the ability of our children to handle crises. My simple question would be, do you love your kids? I know everybody in here would say yes. Well, the way to love your kids is to love one another. Mom and dad, to love each other. It's the greatest way that you can show your love for your kids. They've been married for 32 years. Both of them from Christian backgrounds, grew up in good Christian homes. They had two children. They were good friends of Sherry's and mine. And this was several years ago this occurred, but they would call us. We were at University Church at the time, and they would call us. They were from a town outside of Montgomery, away from Montgomery, and they'd call the night before and say, we're coming to town to worship with you guys. Y'all want to go to lunch? And we'd worship together and go to lunch together, and we'd talk and have a big time, and they'd get back in their van, and they'd go back to their home. Well, I got a call from the husband one day, and he said, do you mind if my wife and I come talk to you? We're about to get a divorce. I said, what? We're about to get a divorce. 32 years of marriage. Well, that was unbelievable. That in and of itself. Because I've known this couple long. In fact, I performed their wedding ceremony many years ago. But when they came in and told me their story, it was almost unbelievable to me. She said, we've been living together at least for the last 5 years and just kind of going through the motions as husband and wife. She said, I fix dinner every night. We sit across the table from each other and we never say a word. I wash his clothes. He goes to work. I go to work. We come back. We'll get in the car and go to church and never speak to one another. We'll get out of the car and we're speaking, saying, hi, how you doing? Good to see y'all. And we speak to everybody else and we get back in the car. We don't even speak. I couldn't believe it. I still have trouble believing that. But it made me stop and wonder, brethren, how many married couples among us are just going through the motions No romance. No passion. They've given up on each other and on their marriages. How many? Well, I have no idea. And I'm talking about in our fellowship. But they're out there. Believe me, they're out there. Great married love and romance begins in the head long before it leads to the bed. Would you please let that sink in? Great married romance begins in the head long before it leads to the bed. The way we treat our spouse during the day has everything to do with the romance at night. Everything. The way we treat one another. The things we say. The way we act toward one another. Whether we show respect or disdain for. Whether we're critical or whether we're positive. And so I want to concentrate for just a few minutes on some secrets to deeper love. Secrets to a deeper love. And I hope that some of these will, I know you. This is nothing new to any of you, but I hope that some of these will remind you of things that you ought to be doing. Do you remember what it was like when we were dating each other? I mean, we were kind and respectful and thoughtful, and we wanted to talk and be with each other and share each other's dreams and goals and problems, and we were understanding. We were best friends, and whatever we did then made us get to the point where we felt like we wanted to spend the rest of our life together and have a family together. It worked. So we married. And so many times in so many marriage relationships, the first year or two is great, then we start growing apart. You know the Bible says you reap what you sow? If you don't invest in your marriage relationship, guess what's going to happen? You, whether you're a Christian or not, will grow apart from your spouse. We have to invest. Everybody ever told you marriage is hard work? It is. Marriage is hard work. And most of that work takes place up here in our heads and here in our hearts. You have to work at marriage every day. There's not a day you can't quit working at it. You reap what you sow. It could be that some of us in this room have stopped doing these things that worked over here, that would work right now if we would do them. Oh, we got too much pride. Or whether she's hurt me or he's hurt me so bad I can't get over it. Jesus told the church at Ephesus over there in Revelation 2, He said, you've left your first love. He said, remember from where you've fallen. I would apply that to our marriage relationships. Remember what you did over while you were dating. Repent, He told that church. Change your ways. Get out of the habits you've gotten into, the ruts you've gotten into. Do something different. Do something off the wall. Try something different. Try dating one another. In fact, he goes on to say, do the first works. That's what he says. Try dating again. When was the last time you went on a date? When was the last time you said something nice to your spouse? When was the last time you paid them a compliment? You know, it's great to have activities like this. You know why? Because it reminds us. It reminds us of what we ought to be doing. And maybe we've stopped doing. And it did me good to hear these young couples talk about their families and love they have for their families and ideas that it gave me to be a better husband. Who was it that's the perfect husband out there? There's a perfect husband out there somewhere. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, see there? Isn't that amazing? She thinks he's perfect. What does that guy do? I don't want to interview him after this is all over. That's what she thinks. That's her perception. That's encouraging to me. Gives me something to work toward. He knows he's not perfect. This was encouraging. But it's just a track to run on. Maybe you need to go home and blow up some balloons and put some words on them. Maybe you need to write a note of appreciation to your wife or to your husband that you haven't done in 10 or 15 years. Maybe you just need to say a kind word. Don't take them for granted. Appreciate what you got. Don't wait till it's taken away from you until you appreciate them. Appreciate them today. Show your love today before it's too late. Swallow that pride. You may choke on it. You have so much of it. Swallow it. Love that person the way you promised God that you would. For some reason, I feel like I'm preaching. I tell you, brethren, when I start talking about this, especially in settings like this, I want to drive the point home because I see it every day. There are couples breaking up out there, giving up on one another. You reap what you sow in marriage. So, secrets to a deeper love. Secret number one, husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church. There's a secret for you. Ephesians 5, verse 25. I suggest this is the premier command for husbands. Right at the top. Command, love your wives. Not a suggestion, not a good idea, God's command. How? How, God? The way Christ loved the church. What other kind of love could God have used to give us the idea of how we're to love our wives that would have been any better? There's none. The way Christ loved the church, He gave His all for the church. He wants us to give our all for our wives, husbands. He was not waiting to get something in return from us. He loved us before we ever knew about Him. He was selfless, totally. That's the kind of love God wants us husbands to have for our wives. Command. That lets me know that love is a decision. Love is a decision. It is a matter of the will. Have you made up your mind to love your spouse? Have you made up your mind to love your wife, husbands? The way Christ loved the church. His love was not dependent on our love for Him. Sometimes I know, somebody expressed it well up there, we don't ever talk about divorce. We talked about murder a few times, but not divorce. I know there are days, in fact, that's the way I feel about our relationship. Now again, if I won't share it, no, I've told you this, I'll let her know myself, okay? There are days that Sherry and I don't like each other. Oh man, this is recorded, isn't it? There's not a day but what we don't love each other. There's a difference there. There are days when she says or does something that really frustrates me. I do the same thing. I'm not proud of that. And I disappoint her or make her mad or let her down some way. Or maybe I'm just not feeling good and I'm short with her, or maybe vice versa. We don't like each other, but we still love each other. We work through those times and those difficulties. We come out on the other side, and we're better for it. I am not willing to lose my wife to the devil. I'm going to love my wife. I'm going to make up my mind to love my wife the way God has commanded me to do. Secret number two. Wives, respect your husband and submit to his leadership. That's not my opinion, not my idea, God's idea. Again, it's a command. Ephesians 5, there are a couple of commands there. One for the husbands to love your wives, as Christ loved the church. Wives, submit to your husband in the same way you submit to Christ, the same way He is the head of the church. That Greek word is hupotasso. Hupo meaning under, tasso meaning to arrange under. God has ordered it that way. Doesn't mean He's the dictator. Doesn't mean that He's any better than you. You know, when I get on an airplane to fly to the next state, it's not that that pilot is superior to me, but I sure do submit myself to that man and allow him to take that plane where it needs to go. Do your thing. Secret number three. Husbands, be considerate as you live with your wife. The ESV says, in an understanding way, live with your wife. The King James says, live with your wife according to knowledge. In marriage, every one of us ought to be a good student and a good teacher. Both of us. We ought to be a good teacher. Each of us needs to be assertive enough to tell our spouse what our needs are, what our desires are, what our thoughts are, what our dreams are, what our goals are, what our frustrations are, what our desires are. We ought to be a good student, listen and learn. And then this one needs to be a good student and tell this one, a good teacher, and this one needs to be a good student. We need to teach one another and learn from one another. Somebody expressed it already here today. When I was a young husband, I didn't know blah, 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 and she taught me. Yeah. Guys, we need to open our minds and learn. Gals, we need to open our minds and learn from one another. But you know, that command, it bothers me as a husband. 1 Peter 3, verse 7. Because the way that verse ends says, you treat her as the weaker vessel. And by the way, that what's being expressed there is, you set her up on a pedestal. You value your wife, husbands. Look with me over there at that verse, if you would. 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. Look with me at verse 7. Husbands, live with them according to knowledge, giving honor to the wife. Giving honor to the wife. In Hebrews 13:4, the Bible says marriage is to be had in honor. And the word there used for honor is the Greek word timios, which means precious, valuable. Somebody described this verse, and I love the way that they said it. Treat your wife like a piece of precious crystal. You're careful with crystal. You care for it. You dust it off. You put it up where people can see it because you're proud and happy about it. Treat your wife that way. As the weaker vessel, and I believe he's talking about physically there, as being heirs together of the grace of life. Here's the part that bugs me and bothers me. That your prayers be not hindered. Husbands, are you listening? God's saying, in essence, I'm watching you. I'm watching the way you treat your wife. And if you don't want something to come between you and me in our relationship, you better treat her with respect and kindness and value and cherish her. God's watching us. Be considerate as you live with your wife. Pray to God that He'll help you guys to see the blind spots. You ever been driving and changed lanes and somebody, honk, honk, honk? Well, I didn't even see that car. It was in my blind spot, you know? Pray that God will help you in those blind spots where you may be inconsiderate of your wife. I oftentimes cite the work of John Gottman, and I want to mention one concept of Gottman here at this point. He's a researcher at the University of Washington, and his concept is simply called turning toward each other. Great concept. And a great way for us to be reminded, and I have needed this reminder myself many times. Let's say you got a couple, and they're in a lake cabin, and they're to spend the weekend together, and the wife's over looking out the window at the lake, and the boat's on the lake, and husband's over here across the room, and he's cleaning his glasses. His wife makes a remark. She says, oh, honey, look at the boat out in the middle of the river. Look how pretty that boat is out in the middle of the lake. If her husband does not turn toward her, he just keeps looking at his glasses and cleaning his glasses. Doesn't pay attention to her. What does that do when somebody ignores you like that? What does it do when you don't confirm them or affirm them? When you don't pay attention to them? What's the message? That's not important what you're saying to me. That's not important. You're not important to me. But if he turns toward her, he'll stop what he's doing and he'll look and he'll say, yes, I see, dear. Now, that's turning toward her, but an enthusiastic turning toward her is, yes, I see, dear. Oh, wouldn't it be great if we had a boat like that one that we could get on that lake and ride out like they're doing right now across that lake together? Huh? See the difference? It's turning toward your spouse. It's valuing your spouse, what they have to say. Gottman says, learn your wife's dreams. Learn your wife's dreams. He did a research study. After 6 years of marriage, those who turned toward, 86% of them are still married after 6 years. The vast majority. Do you turn toward your spouse? And he talks about bids. Married people bid toward one another. They're asking for love and attention. Do we hear those bids? Do we respond to those bids? Turning toward is the basis of emotional connection, romance, passion, and a good sex life, Gottman says. Secret number four. Husbands, do not be harsh with your wife. Colossians 3:19. Husbands, love your wives. Be not bitter, the King James says. Be not harsh, the English Standard says, against them. Men, we are physically stronger. I know there are some women in this world that can beat up some men. There are some women that I would hate to meet at night in a dark alley. I know that. But generally speaking, men are stronger than women. That's the way God's made us. We need to control our physical strength. We need to control. Have you ever noticed how the male voice is deeper than the woman's voice? It's kind of high. Sometimes we use that male voice to dominate. Sometimes we use our size to dominate. Young couple I told you about earlier today? She left with the kids earlier in the week. I don't know how it's going to turn out yet. She started telling me stuff that he'd been doing to dominate her. Not letting her go to the grocery store and buy the groceries she wanted. She said, spending too much money. Doesn't give her any money, spend like she wants. He's got to keep up with every single penny. Dominating. Calling her names in front of the kids. No respect. Dominating. Don't be harsh to your wife. Realize that harsh answers, angry looks, irritated tones of voice, impatience will deeply affect your sensitive wife. Don't be harsh with the precious gift that God has given you. Secret number five. Your body belongs to your spouse. Please turn, if you have your Bibles, to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Ricky, what time is lunch? Okay, good. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And here Paul gives God's direction here. Look at verse 3. Let the husband render to the wife her due, King James says, due benevolence. It's conjugal rights. Likewise, the wife also the husband. The wife does not have power of her own body, but the husband. Likewise, also the husband does not have power of his own body, but the wife. King James says, defraud ye not one the other. In other words, don't withhold that which rightfully belongs to the other, except it be with consent for a time that you may give yourself to fasting and prayer and come together again that Satan tempts you not for your incontinency, your inability to control your desires. We have a spiritual responsibility in this area. God commands it. We promised it when we got married. To the best of our abilities, as long as we live, we'll meet this obligation. We're not to deprive our spouse of what he or she needs. If I may speak very frankly for just a couple minutes, many women will never tell their husbands that they would like to have intense, pleasurable feelings during moments of intimacy. Many women won't tell their husbands that. Husbands, assume that she does and provide it. Ironically, many men are trapped in situations where their wives are not providing for their sexual needs, and I believe that's wrong based on what we've talked about. When their wives might become very excited in this area and very interested in sex if their needs were being met. Husbands, with much practice, sharing, and focused time, you can learn to make your wife feel as good, if not better, than you during sexual intercourse. Remember that physical intimacy is something that you give, not something that you take. Sexual intercourse is not something that you do to someone, it is something you do with someone. Secret number six. Husbands, rejoice in your wife. Let her breast satisfy you. Be captivated with her. Proverbs 5, verses 18 and 19. No man should be looking at other women or pictures of other women when he has a wife that he can go to and every day and gaze at. Wife should, of course, provide for the visual needs of the husband by exposing herself to him often and in erotic ways, as God intends. Wives should strive to keep their bodies as attractive as possible, but not letting the world dictate what attractive means. A husband should become fully satisfied with his wife's body. That's God's will. He should let her breast completely satisfy him in every way, regardless of shape and size. Secret number seven. Wives, ensure that other men do not enjoy your body in public places. Proverbs 5, 16 and 17. A modest woman is a lady. Be very modest in public and erotic in private with your husband. Sisters, why show the world? Why show the world what should only be for your husband's eyes? And husbands, when your wives wear a skimpy outfit for you, you see things that no one else ever does. That one practice will increase your feelings of masculinity and her feelings of femininity. Secret number eight. Husbands, do not be captivated with other women. Proverbs 5, verse 20. Why then, my son, be ravished with a strange woman and embrace the bosom of a stranger? Finding other women attractive and looking at them will erode your view of your wife. Nothing good will come from that. You'll be less satisfied with your wife. She will feel less special to you. If you think that you can hide looking at other women with lustful glances from your wife, you're mistaken. She will see it. She will notice. Remember to be captivated with your wife and no one else. She will feel like the queen of your world. You'll fall further in love with her. Secret number seven. Husbands, praise your wife. Proverbs 31, verses 28 and 29. Tell her she's special. I wish we had time. I wanted to pass out some index cards and go through another exercise here, but I just don't see how we're going to be able to do it, Ricky. Let me just encourage you. Tell your wife you appreciate her. Write her a note. That's something she can keep and read over and over and go back to. Don't just mention her physical beauty, but her care for you, her hard work, her ladylike attributes. She longs for those words, and she longs to hear them from you, husbands. Secret number 10. Let's see, am I skipping around or is that, am I right? Number 10. Husbands and wives, tell your spouse how captivated you are with his or her body. Use your example song, Solomon. What a great example for us to follow. How those two in marriage told each other about their different body parts, how they loved and admired each other. Fall in love with every single part of her body like Solomon did with his betrothed. God made your spouse, and God didn't make any mistakes. Tell your spouse how beautiful their body is to you. Secret number 11, honor your marriage by remaining true to your spouse in every way. Keep your marriage pure by training your eyes. Job said in Job 31:1, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look on a maid. Control what you look at. Secret number 12, husbands and wives, be thankful for your spouse and realize the favor you have received from God. Proverbs 18:22. Whoever finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor of the Lord. A good wife is a blessing from God. A good husband is a blessing from God. Just think of how lonely you would be without your spouse. You have a lifetime companion, a friend, and a lover to enjoy every day. What a blessing. Thank God for your mate daily. Perhaps the best legacy that you can leave your children is a mom and daddy who love each other. What a great gift that we can give our children. Okay, we're going to take a break right now, maybe a 5-minute just stretch break.